That was bad timing. This is the Freedom Fiends. Yes, Freedom Fiends are over the target, taking flack. We will fight them on the interwebs. We will fight them on the Twitters. We will fight them on the face beefs. We will fight them on the radio. We will fight them on the podcasts. Hey, Davy Barker, how you doing? This is Michael Dean.
How's it going?
It's going good, man.
You know, it's funny you said bad timing, and what people may not know is that even though I'm hearing the music, when it plays back in the podcast, it's like a split second off.
Yeah.
And every time I listen, I'm trying to correct myself. I'm trying to intentionally meow off time so that it sounds correct for the listeners.
Yeah, I can't even.
That's how I suffer.
I can't even do it. You know, the only person that can do it. We still got to work that. But the only person that could really do it is Derek J. Derek J should be in a rock band.
He's a genius.
He should be in a rock band because he's smart. He's good looking. He's stylishly dressed. He's relatively young. He's young, and he can sing. Man, that kid can sing. I'm pretty amazed.
Too.
Yeah, he can dance too. Why doesn't he start a band? Derek J, move to Wyoming and be my pet and live in my basement, and we'll start a band and go play cowboy bars.
I would come.
I would come. A lot of people would come. Yeah, anyway, we're on the radio. This is government controlled radio. And so much to talk about. So basically, this episode is called Journalism with Meowing. And then back to the hot tub. There's actually going to be no journalism in this. It's all back to the hot tub. The hot tub is what Davy... Tell us about the hot tub, Davy.
I just, you know... So the first time that I was ever on The Fiends, I was terrible.
You were terrible. You're not only really good now, you would definitely win the most improved player.
I've already won the most improved player. I need a new award.
You make yourself your own shiny trophy for that?
Yep. Okay. So, I was sort of, you know, I sounded awkward. I didn't sound sure what I was saying. I was mumbly and whatever. I just didn't. It was not good radio.
Yeah.
And then I discovered the thing to do is to just pretend that you're sitting in a hot tub, relaxing with friends, chatting about whatever comes to mind.
Yeah.
And so that's how I think of the Freedom Fiends. For me, this is my evening, relaxing in the hot tub, listening to the sultry sounds of Michael Dean laughing at my jokes.
And Davy. And yeah, and you know, that's one of the neat things about the Fiends. But occasionally, very occasionally, I feel a pressing need to, you know, stop with the calling the president a liar and saying his feet stink and laughing at it. It's all true, but we're laughing at it. But it's not really journalism. And do some actual journalism. You know, people write me all the time, like, you should interview so-and-so. Some guy wrote me the other day and said, I invented the liberty movement. You should interview me. And, like, he also said that he was a comedian. And the guy was, like, 80. And I was like, or I don't know, he was older than me. He had a gray beard. So I'm not making fun of the guy. I'm just saying, like, I saw it. And it said, yeah, he invented the liberty movement. And he said he was a comedian, and I said, well, you just made me laugh. I almost said that. But then I looked him up, and this guy actually, like, was heavily involved in the Liberty Movement in, like, you know, the mid-60s. He came out of SDS and then, like, was sent to infiltrate Carl Hess and then, like, became friends with Carl Hess and became a libertarian. And, like, but I don't know. It just didn't intrigue me, man. I'm serious.
You know why? It's because we know the guy that invented the Liberty Mission.
Yeah, Ben Stone, the bad Quaker. He's a great man. Yeah, but so occasionally I have to do something that resembles journalism. So I don't interview, like, even libertarian greats that are underreported. You know, it's so much like trouble to do an interview. Like, I've been trying to get Jeff Riggenbach on here for like a year. And that guy is interesting. He has a great voice. And he was an OG libertarian in the 70s. He's like, oh, yeah, well, write me again in a month. I'm busy right now. And it's like, come on, man. You know, I would rather do radio with Davy or any of my other 13 weird friends that are on this show because there's no prep needed. We just talk and it's fun. Then, like, talk to somebody, pregame with them, you know, make sure they have as good sound as they can, tell them that, you know, not have their roommates using the Netflix while they're on the Skype with me, thing, like, everything, you know, basically
And remind them not to swear.
Yeah, we've had two interviews recently where people swore, and we hit the cuss dump in time. But that's like, we've only had one person swear on this show in like, in a year of almost daily radio now. And it was the guy, Brendan from Death Clock, who you'd expect to swear, but he didn't know it was radio. He thought it was internet radio, which is another thing. Amazing how many people don't know what talk radio is. Like, we put up this Molyneux interview this week and it got so much traffic. And a lot of the comments were like, good interview, but why is the interviewee keep getting cut off when you go to the ads? You should space the ads differently. And I'm like, have you ever listened to talk radio? It's a clock that punches you in the face every 13 minutes. You can't tell it to wait. And someone who's doing an interview, even if they're good, if they've never been on radio, and even if you explain it to them, they get going, they're telling something important to them, they don't get that the clock is going to punch us all in the face at a certain time. You know, they just keep going. And the weird thing is, like, I really think, like, especially in Europe, but even in America, I think there are a lot of people who've never listened to talk radio, which, you know, most talk radio, I can see why, but isn't that weird?
You know, I don't know. I listen to talk radio, like regular talk radio in the car, as long as I can stomach it. And sometimes they'll say things like, oh, we need to go to a break, we've gone over. So I wonder if people are under the impression that we can change the breaks.
Maybe Rush Limbaugh can, but I can't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know anybody who actually does. I know Free Talk Live can't. I mean, anybody who is on like a syndicated network, the commercials aren't even coming from their studio. So I don't even know how you would.
No, it's to an atomic clock, man. It's automated. I mean, you'd have to have them, you know, you'd have to call the board op 12 hours ahead of time and have him change the show clock to do it is the only way you could do it. I mean, we could keep talking through the break, turn down the commercial and record on our end and put it on the podcast, but that's not what I'm about. You know, I kind of like
to. I wonder if some radio marketing guy at some point decided that it would make the audience feel important if the host acted like they went overtime. Is that possible?
I don't know, man. I think it's all based on financials of putting ads in there, of having enough ads in there to make enough money, but not so many ads that people tune out. Yeah, man, it's really weird. Some of the, and also like, okay, so I did some journalism and I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm just saying like, this week was different than what we usually do. And somebody might say journalism, that's pretty high praise for yourself. But Nima Vidadi came to me and said it was journalism, and he was a journalist by trade, went to journalism school, worked at TV stations, understands network news, worked for, you know, big three TV companies, two of them. And he said it had what we did the other day, yesterday, had all the earmarks of journalism. I did research. I found a story. I found two primary sources. I did the research to link and show pictures to prove they were who they said they were. And I got absolute information on record from people who were in the room when it happened to prove things. I wouldn't say prove things, but to show things in a journalistic way that, you know, would pass the journalism sniff test at a major network, of something people've been conjecturing about for years. And nobody's ever really been able to say, yes, here is my proof. So there I go.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, Davi, would you make me up a shiny badger journal, Pulitzer, please? A Punk-litzer?
An official journalist?
Yeah, yeah. And then I'll, what is that thing where Homer wins a Pulitzer Prize running a website that's all gossip and then like keeps doing it. And Lisa's like, oh, you should at least take your Pulitzer off when you're doing that, Homer. Yeah,
I should find and republish the Declaration of Independent Media. I wrote it in like 2003, and it was before I was doing anything on the internet, so it was pretty much Xerox copies I was handing around to other people who made zines. But I bet it's still relevant.
Did it work? You wrote things down on paper. Did it work?
Well, I don't know. No, I mean, it wasn't a constitution. It was a declaration. So yeah. It wasn't supposed to work. It was just a statement of principles. But it is absolutely. I have held true to that oath because I have never worked for mainstream media, which was essentially the only thing I promised.
And, you know, a lot of people who like live in their mother's basement and say, you know, here's another thing, too. I run up against like with newly minted libertarians who live in their mother's basement, which I've had a lot of them, a lot more than usual of them talk to me in the past 2 weeks because of this whole thing. You know, they have these absolutes of like, if you pay taxes, you're not an anarchist. And I'm like, if you pay taxes, you own stuff and don't want the government shooting you in the head and taking it. You know, I mean, if you really think you can leave your mother's basement one day, own a house and not pay property taxes, you're choosing the wrong battles, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I said I misspoke on something on the thing yesterday on the journalism episode that I want to correct because I sounded stupid. It was really pressed for time. Like, didn't know if the second guy would be available. There was a lot of things that could have gone wrong. They mostly all went right to make that happen. It's gotten more more hits than anything the Fiends have ever done, any episode. But I haven't made money at it, and I, of course, and I don't want to, I don't care to, and I think we've actually lost overall listeners because about 5% of the Fiends hardcore listeners are also hardcore Steph bots and have like deleted me and told me that. But I said this one thing about prison in passing. I said, anyone can be rehabilitated. I know people have actually been to prison for murder, been rehabilitated and gotten out and led decent lives and never hurt anyone again. I wasn't saying prisons rehabilitate. I was thinking about two people in particular I knew, from one from NA, one from AA, who'd served, you know, between 9 and 15 years in prison for killing someone, not for just being there like, you know, Mark Edge was. He was there and maybe had something to do with it. But, and he's another one too. He's not a bad guy. He's not a killer. But,
and even though he didn't actually kill that guy, he has absolutely reformed from the sort of creep that he was at the time.
Yeah. And he did say at one, he can't talk about that because of laws with like, you know, the Son of Sam law, like
it can't be construed that he's profiting from the story. Yeah, so, and as a talk personality, right. that's a fine line,
you know, people think he's avoiding it, but that's why he won't talk about it directly. But I wasn't saying that prison reforms people. I was saying that in my experience, there are people who've been to prison for murder and reformed their lives. Most of it happened through like 12-step program memberships in prison and or after prison. You know, prisons don't reform people. So I want to make that clear.
And I'd also like to make clear that mandated attendance of these sorts of programs doesn't reform people either. You have to want to change. Absolutely.
Yeah. I've been the guy running the meeting, signing enough of those slips to know those people don't generally stick around. And then they figure out they can sign them themselves. There you go, kids. That's news you can use for the day. Judges don't check. All right. We'll be back.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Have you recently defooed a cult that demands constant devotion to a figurehead? The guy who claims to be anti-IP, but uses IP to silence critics? That charming gentleman who thinks all your problems are from bad parenting? If you're tired of tithing to messiahs who demand a lot of your money, consider donating to the Freedom Fiends. We're more fun and don't require constant praise. In fact, we don't even like audience involvement. We talk, you listen, if you want. And if you send us a dollar, we won't complain. We'll dig it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Worms!
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
I'm doing it too. I'm doing it too. Yeah. So, a bunch of infected monkeys have escaped from the army testing lab. So even though it's sweltering, folks, don't roll down those windows because those monkeys are confused and irritable. Hi, Homer. How was your
day?
Oh, it was good. I just sat in front of the computer. How was your day, Flanders? Oh, a crazy guy shot a bunch of people and the train ran over my hat.
What are you reading?
I'm reciting that Simpsons episode where Homer gains 200 pounds so he can stay home on disability and use a computer. And those are two of the things like about showing how much better it is working at home because, you know, Flanders is coming back from work all stressed out. And then I don't know if it's before Homer gets that fat or if it's Flanders in the car, but someone's listening to talk news radio and there's a news report. He's like in a traffic jam. Everyone's beeping and it says, all right, folks, and a bunch of infected monkeys have escaped from the army testing lab. So no matter how sweltering it is, don't roll down those windows because those monkeys are confused and irritable. I love that. And confused and irritable has become a meme for our cats around this house. My wife and I say that to each other based on that Simpsons. Like, you know, when they're in there yelling for dinner or yelling for no reason at all, we're like, oh, Fuzzy, are you confused and irritable?
That reminds me of your Amazon ad where you say to shop at Amazon to avoid drive-by shootings.
Drive-by stabbings. Yeah, drive-by stabbings. Yeah, man. I like our ads a lot. I like them more than most talk radio. They don't make me want to turn the channel, but maybe that's just me. You know, I probably should make some new ones, though. I actually have, but I don't know. We have some ad space coming available if people want to buy some ads at reasonable, popular prices. You can write to talkback@freedomfiends.com. I have another announcement. We're going to be moving servers this week to a much faster, much more secure, much more, I don't want to say bulletproof, but it'll have better uptime server, dedicated server run by Derek Slopey, Thursday and Friday. So there may be some minor temporary web outages. And hey, Davi, is your mic facing Mecca?
No, it's not.
People are like, what are you talking about? What? Okay. You've heard me complain. If you're a regular Fiends listener, you've heard me complain from time to time about Davi has a slight buzz in his microphone. He's using the same mic all the other co-hosts are doing. None of them have it. He's walked around the room. He can't find the source of this noise. We finally figured out the other day that when his mic is facing east or west, it does not buzz. When it's facing north or south, it buzzes.
Right.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, I guess your mic has to face Mecca then, and you explained something to me about Mecca. It can be, what, west or east or north? Is that it?
From well, where, to go California? All the way back, you have to understand that my mic, my office was literally oriented to face Mecca. It makes it easier to pray in this room. And so the orientation of my office was the reason my mic was pointed this way.
You got to remember there's like four people listening out of the 27 people listening on radio right now who are going, wait, what? What did he just say?
Okay. What did he just say?
Okay, go on.
Sit down. Take a deep breath. The person you're listening to on the radio is Muslim. Okay, now we can move on.
Do you love Obama?
Yeah, and I still think that Obama is a crazy socialist and his feet stink.
His feet stink, man. Yeah. All right, so moving right along. Yeah, Mecca, what direction is it? I'd say east, but you know, so what do I know?
If you think of the Earth as a sphere, which most people do, a line is typically the shortest distance between two points. And even though on the maps that you had in school, the Middle East is, you know, east... On a sphere, the Middle East is actually north because the shortest distance between here and there, us both being in the northern hemisphere, is actually up. So, yeah, if you're in North America, but you actually pray north, not east. Usually,
but does God listen as the crow flies or as like a paper airplane would fly?
You would like have to take a consensus of all the angels on the head of a pin.
There is an argument about this. Explain the argument.
So, yeah, there is an argument about this. There's essentially the scientific argument, which says, yeah, you pray in the direction as the crow flies, even though a crow wouldn't fly over the North Pole. But and the other one is
crack and fall from the sky if it did. But go on.
The other argument is that you follow sort of traditional calculation methods used by medieval scholars. So the people that like to sort of let medieval scholarship trump their modern opinions have a tendency to say, oh, no, you go east because it was calculated that way in the Middle Ages. And so those groups will pray east, even if they're in North America.
Yeah, but I think the orientation, that is good news that most people I know can't use, but it's interesting to me. I'm not a Muslim. I'm a deist, if anyone wants to know, which is basically like an agnostic who believes in God or a person who believes in God but thinks he doesn't answer your prayers and doesn't come down and, you know, make your daughter not die of cancer or make the bus come on time, no matter how much you pray. So... yeah, we'll talk more about what we really think is happening with your microphone.
And this, remember, this comes back to a microphone.
A microphone. Yeah, I think it's just the government's put something under your floor to listen to you and it's facing a certain direction. But that's just me. All right, next topic after this.
Worms.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah! This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Music, 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 music. I made this music, and it's all of it, and it's really good. But sometimes I'm like, I want to talk. When will this music be over? This infernal Michael Dean music.
The all devil right. music.
So, you've been making some memes, Davi Barker.
I am. I'm a meme fighter.
You are. You're like double. We're so busy that sometimes we do radio while like doing stuff, making stuff, like kind of multitasking. And I guess there's probably some people who go, yeah, we can tell. But I think there's other people who are like, yeah, that's part of the joy, man. You just don't give a. Yeah, you made some memes, and someone else is Crazy Rich has been making some memes, all to do with the Cantwellian, not the Cantwell. Oops, sorry. The other he who cannot be named. Molyneux, he cannot be shamed. He who cannot be shamed. And I'm like,
I'm testing that hypothesis.
Yeah, yeah. Crazy Rich was putting the Freedom Fiends URL on him because he always does with fiend stuff. And I was actually like, take that off, man. I mean, I like the memes, but you know, doing like the journalism that I did yesterday and then having my show name on memes today that are like at the guy, it'd be kind of like if Woodward and Bernstein's story about Nixon, you know, real like this world changing, supposedly literary journalistic thing had come out in the Washington Post. And then the next day, Woodward and Bernstein got drunk and like peed on the White House lawn and took pictures of it and passed them around, faxed them to other journalists.
That'd be okay with me. I think there's room for journalists to cut loose occasionally.
I didn't have anything to do with this paperclip meme.
Yeah, I don't know anything.
Well, I didn't come up with the paperclip. You added the paperclip, and the paperclip is the funniest part, man. Yeah. Did you want to take responsibility for something going down or no? I don't think you should.
What do you mean going down?
We don't know anybody at Anonymous. No.
Oh yeah, you want it? Well, no.
You didn't do it. I didn't do it.
I didn't do it. I didn't build that. I didn't unbuild that.
I didn't unbuild that. Yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about this secret society that you and I are members of that some have accused of being a cult.
Yeah,
because
Bavarian Gulch.
With the Bavarian Gulch meetings. Yeah, because we have an inner chamber where people meet, but we don't have the inner chamber to like you know, decide who should marry who and things like that. We actually just you and I and Ben Stone have this thing we do frequently.
Well, so far we're all married. I mean, once we get some single people in there, maybe we'll start hooking them up. But
if I ran a cult, it would have women in it. And I'm not just saying that's what I'd want. I'm saying I could do it. I would also, if I ran a cult, like the first $50 I would demand in tithing to me, I'd say, spend that on yourself and get a good microphone. So when you're on my podcast, you don't sound like you're down a well. But, you know, I guess cult leaders, a lot of them want them to sound good and the minions to sound bad. But, okay, so you and Ben and I have this sort of inner circle thing. But unlike cult inner circles, there's no way to buy your way into this. There's no way to, like, do free work and get into this. It's always only ever going to be you and Ben and I. And it's, we get together sometimes on email, sometimes on the phone, sometimes on Skype. And we talk for between an hour and 3 hours. And it's kind of like I say it's like the secret podcast we never record. And I talked about it on the internet one time. And one guy said, I'm already subscribed to your secret podcast. And I'm like, oh, do you work for the NSA? Because that's the only people who could be. But mostly it's just three friends talking. But talk a little more about it. Make some people more want to be involved. Make
them want to be in our secret club.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, it's where we centrally plan the talking points of the Liberty Movement. So everybody, you know, is on the same page and in agreement and toting the party line, even though there's no party.
centrally plan Liberty.
I don't know. I guess it's a good place to sort of share your quandaries if you're having a sort of thought process that isn't necessarily for publication yet,
and plan memes,
and plan memes. Right. We orchestrate our memes there.
Yeah.
And mainly it's like hanging out in a hot tub and telling jokes.
It's like hanging out. It's really what it's like is hanging out with two plump, bearded, middle-aged men with beards in a hot tub.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're not that plump. Did I hurt your feelings?
No, I'm a little plump.
You kind of fell off the mic. Are you back?
I'm here. Yeah. Can you hear me?
You just got real quiet. It's because I said you're a little bit plump. We're all a little bit plump.
I hung
you know
my
what?
Head in shame.
No, no, man. Our guts suffered for liberty because literally I was pretty good shape. Even after having a computer for a decade, like I was in pretty good shape until I discovered Liberty and then realized must stay on internet and create media. Something's happening on the internet. Must check it out. You know, so I sit here 24/7 so y'all don't have to.
Yeah. I got an app on my phone that I'm really excited about. It's called Zombie Run. And what it is it's an audiobook that uses your GPS data while you're jogging to put you into a story about a zombie outbreak.
Is it cheesy? Is it like, you know, the zombies are all around you. You're located in San Francisco.
No, what it doesn't do anything quite like, doesn't actually know where I am, but it'll tell me you've picked up a pair of jeans. You've picked up a roll of batteries. And so like you get like little bonuses as you're running, but no, essentially if you slow down too much, it starts making zombie noises in your ears and says zombies are 40 meters away. Zombies are 20 meters away.
But
there's also
what
a plot
is
it, to
what
it.
Is, what does it actually do with your environment that's different for different people?
So there's a few different modes. In the story mode, it doesn't do anything. It's just it's time-based or distance-based, and you set what you want, and it sort of chimes in your earphone like you're listening to a radio from home base, and they're telling you, you know, pick up this stuff or run this way or whatever. But you can also set it to like give you a they're called supply runs, and you pick the place that the supplies are, and it like finds a track for you, and you run through the city, and it does the same thing. Zombies chase you and you pick up supplies, but
could this
it uses
be, could
your
this
map.
Be combined with in real life geocaching? That would be pretty
oh, it
cool.
totally should. These guys yeah. haven't done that yet, and if they're looking for somebody to help them develop that, I think there's a lot of potential for a game like this as
explain geocaching if people listening on radio don't know what it is.
It's like where people hide things and then they
it's hide and seek or an egg hunt with computers, kind of.
Right, with GPS coordinates, like literally like latitude and longitude numbers are have you heard of bit caching?
Yeah,
people have put geocaching numbers, latitude and longitude numbers in the blockchain so that people can go and look for paper wallets that
well,
are buried
to put,
out there.
To put information, okay, like Namecoin is made so you can put text in the blockchain. It's the point of it is to put IP addresses and domain names, but and you can put other stuff in there. You know, I could put in there like Davi owes me $5 or something like that. And, you know, or you could put like so-and-so is a cult leader. You could put that in the blockchain of Namecoin. I could do it right now during the show and it would be like in there.
Well, then
forever.
That person would have to, you know, send a cease and desist letter to the blockchain to have the offensive information taken down for copyright infringement.
But the thing with Bitcoin is you can't really put money in the blockchain. You can put money in a transaction and it'll show up
text.
On text. Did I say money? Yeah, text.
Yeah.
You can put text in the block in a transaction and it'll show up on blockchain.info.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But it's not really in the blockchain. But you if you're a miner, you can actually put text in the blockchain.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm talking about the transaction notes at blockchain.info.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, people get really into it and they buried stuff like way out in the woods and they're sort of like they call them caches. See, it's not C-A-S-H, it's C-A-C-H-E, like a cache of goods.
Yeah.
Or cache, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not just for Bitcoiners. It's an adventure game. It's an outdoor sport. And I think that it could absolutely be combined with one of these interactive novels. And I think that these interactive audiobooks could incorporate much more of the environment that you're in.
Make your own zombie adventure.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely, I ran further and faster than I have before and, you know, hurt myself doing it. And so I would say that's a success and I'm working on that gut.
I think you should write your next book in third person. Have you ever thought about that or looked into that?
Third person?
Yeah. First person is I said to Mabel, You know, yeah. blah, blah, blah. Second person is most books. He said, she said. Third person is you said. You're walking through the streets of the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. You know, I tried to do that in a creative writing class in college, and I found it very difficult to do because it's hard to write a story in such a way that you don't ever reveal anything about the reader. Because the moment you reveal anything about the character, the reader knows it's not them anymore.
Well, there's only three books written in third person, and I wrote one of them. But the most famous one is, well, the Make Your Own Adventure series is a series. The book Bright Lights Big City, which is about some drug addict news reporter, which actually was made into a bad movie with Michael J. Fox, but it's a pretty good book. And my book, Simple Pleasures of a Complex Girl, which is a self-published novel about a leftist anarchist Texas cowboy punk rock band, punk rock industrial band.
Called, you know, I think second person is you and third person is he, but I'm not sure. Can we confirm? Can we get our crack team of socialist Googlers on
there?
Why
don't you get on it while I explain the first... You look it up while I explain the first geocached movie was Blair Witch Project in 1999. Do you know about how that was made?
No.
Basically, the guys who made it, Daniel Myrek and Eduardo Sanchez, had the idea for it and, you know, put an ad in newspapers in New York City, had a casting call for actors. They got a bunch of actors no one had heard of, stage actors, etc. The guy Josh, who I actually know from LA, I interviewed him in a book, and, you know, the tall, good-looking blonde guy, not the short, plump guy, Michael, that kind of looks like me. The tall, good-looking one, who's actually done some work in Hollywood since then, but he's usually played a cameraman, like a news cameraman, because he was a news cameraman in Blair Witch Project. He's holding the camera in Blair Witch.
Yeah.
He was partially cast because he knew how to use a 16-millimeter film camera, but... the way that film was made was like, it wasn't scripted, but it was outlined. And the outline was like, the guys had a GPS unit with them, which wasn't that common or cheap or small in 1999 or accurate. And, they were given directions to, like, you know, go to this point in the woods and there'd be a cache of, like, you know, a little bit of food, a little bit of water, a little bit of cigarettes, you know, maybe a map and, some directions for each of them that they were supposed to read and not show the other person. And, you know, like one day, like Mike's directions were lose the map, you know, and that was what happened. And, you know, another one was like, start an argument with Heather, you know, things like that. That was like their only direction that day, you know, or, you know, accuse the other guy of like going in circles when you're not going in circles. It was all about creating conflict. And as they went on too, like the supplies got less and less. They got like less food, less water, and less cigarettes until they actually were just all freezing and really screaming at each other and fighting.
You know, I actually did that with some friends once. We didn't record it, but we did it. And I guess I'll tell you about it when we get back from the market.
But they were using geo coordinates to say where the cache would be the next day in each cache.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Music, 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 music. Yeah, music. All right. So, Dobby Barker.
Yes,
Dobby Barker. Mr. Dobby Barker. Mr. Dobbelina. Mr. Bob Dobbelina. Remember that song? That was a weird song. It was like,
I know who Bob Dobbs is.
No, this is a Bob Dobbelina song. Now, speaking of cults, yeah, that's kind of a Discordian. Bob Dobbs is kind of a Discordian Church of the Subgenius spinoff. And, you know, the Church of the Discordians, basically, it's no, we're not a, what do they say? We're not a religion designed.
Well, there's a sectarian divide in Discordianism. Some of them believe that it's a joke disguised as a religion disguised as a joke.
Right.
And some of them believe that it's a religion disguised as a joke disguised as a religion.
Which way is Mecca in Discordianism?
It's toward the Pentagon. They make their hodge to the Pentagon.
Do they really?
Yep, it's called the hodgepodge, and they go and they circumambulate the Pentagon, and they throw stones at the Washington Monument, and they eat a hot dog on a Friday.
That's probably inspired by, or maybe inspired, the Yippies tried to surround and levitate the Pentagon in the 60s.
Oh, they do that. They do a reenactment of that as
to
well.
To exercise out the bad spirits, or give them exercise.
No, it's to release Yogg-Sothoth.
Okay, so I made a mistake in the last, what did I say? I knew what I was talking about, and my book is written, my book, Simple Pleasures of a Complex Girl, is in second person, not third person. First and third are the most common. Second is rare. That's what Bright Lights, Big City, and the Make Your Own Adventure series is. But I just misspoke because my brain's full of stuff. So go on and explain them, please, sir.
So yeah, the way to remember it is just to imagine people in a room.
Now, is this your shortcut, or did you read this somewhere?
No, this is my shortcut.
I like it.
So if there's one person, first person in a room, that's you, and the only thing that you can say to yourself is I, unless you're insane. If it's second person, there's two people in a room, and the only thing you can say to the other person is you. And if it's third person, there's three people in the room, and you and the second person are saying he or she about the third person.
Yep, there you go. And while not a lot of literature is written in second person, a lot of advertising. Yeah, a lot of advertising is. You know, call now. Like, literally,
you won't regret it.
Yeah, call now is a complete sentence because
are you suffering from spina bifida? Call now.
There's a parenthetical in call now. It's you, comma, call now. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of ads are in second person. You know, are you tired of the heartbreak of the New World Order? Try colloidal uranium enemas. Yeah.
You know, there's also I've fallen and I can't get up.
That's first person. Yeah, but it's showing, you know, it's a reliable narration, allegedly, of what could happen. Now, let's talk about reliable and unreliable narrators, because we're talking about Fight Club, which is, it kind of switches persons a lot, and it's a really weird movie, and it's kind of a really smart and clever update on a few kind of cheesy old things of, like, you know, there have been movies and stories before where, and it was a book before a story, there have been stories before where, you know, the person has a split personality, and there's a really...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, and there's a
Brad
really...
Brad Pitt is Edward Norton.
Oh, come on. If the movie's over 20 years old, you don't have to give a spoiler alert.
Is it really?
But, you know, there's a really common thing going back to, like, 50s and 60s, like, 60s spy movies of somebody picking up the wrong briefcase. And that's actually a thing in Fight Club. But in Fight Club, it's not someone stealing something or exchanging the, you know, the MacGuffin. It's the same guy talking to himself on a plane. And he is what is called an unreliable narrator, which is a literary device of having the story being told by someone who's insane. And you have to kind of figure it out. Now, what
you know,
you-
a really great example is The Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. Because,
explain.
Or even The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Because in a lot of Edgar Allan Poe stories, the narrator is crazy. And the only thing that tells you what's really going on is the way that tertiary characters react to what he's saying. So, like, in The Telltale Heart, he's wrapped with guilt. He's murdered this person and he's buried them under the floorboards, and he hears the heart under the floors.
Okay.
But it's not really there. It's all in his head.
Yep.
And the police investigator is totally ignoring it. Because it's not really there. And he becomes so infuriated that he thinks the investigator is mocking him by pretending that he can't hear it, that he confesses.
You know, the TV show The Wire, I love it. I've watched it twice all the way through in like a month, like all five seasons. And I'll tell my story about that when we come back. It's an Edgar Allan Poe story because he's from Baltimore and it takes place in Baltimore. But Yeah, welcome to Distance Learning Literature Class with the Freedom Fiends, with Michael Dean and Davi Barker. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market and people saying, you, buy this, call
you,
this.
You, hold through the break, worms.
Well, you, yes, listeners, you, hold through the break. Thank you, you, worms. Oh, not you, worms. Worms can be good things, though. We have a bunch of acronyms now. I've had a lot of caffeine today. All right, we'll be back.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Live from a Windowless bunker. Sunday.
Monday.
Is a day that we do the Freedom Fiends. Well, Sunday. We did a lot of journalism yesterday. It was really good. I want to thank Colleen and Greg for coming on and bearing their soul, and it was really good. And I'll toot my own horn. I did some research on that. I did a lot of research. I looked for sources. I looked for proof. I looked for links. I also did a bunch of pre-gaming with people, which is another reason I don't normally interview if people say, you should interview this libertarian bigwig. He's someone people have heard of. I'm like, I'd rather talk about how the president's feet stink with Davi than do that. But when I want to do an interview, I go after it. And I'm like, this is the most important thing in my life. And I work it 24 hours a day. And I like, you know, talk to the people ahead of time for hours. And a lot of pre-gaming, too, for interviewers. You know, and this is literary advice. We're talking about literature in the first hour on the Freedom Fiends. With myself, Michael W. Dean, and my co-host, Mr. Davi Barker.
And the Shiny Badger.
The Shiny Badger, yeah. And I'm the Warrant Hamster. No, I'm the Iron Hamster. It's like
I'll just introduce you. That'll be the policy.
You should.
You introduce me, and I'll turn around and be like, and I'm here with.
It's like, I know everybody, all my friends' phone numbers, but I don't know my own phone number because I never call it, you know? I don't know my Iron Hamster name. So, yeah, a lot of like, this is some advice. If you're doing interviews with people, try to talk to them ahead of time. And just hang out with them and just talk, even if it's, you know, in person or over Skype or over the phone. Like, just talk for as long as they're willing to, because it makes a rapport. And you actually, like, the questions you ask in a pre-interview, even if you don't ever touch those topics in the interview, first of all, you've got a rapport. You've worked, you checked out the sound quality. You see when you need to get further away, closer, whatever. But also, like, you just kind of... It's kind of like how you and I, Davi, like we send each other show notes throughout the week. Like, okay, what are we going to talk about tomorrow? You'll send me five topics and links. And then a lot of times we end up talking about one of them or none of them. But having them there makes it a better show. And it's kind of like
our mental safety net.
It is. It's kind of like how I actually had a teacher one time. It told me, you should write a cheat sheet for the test and keep it in your pocket and never pull it out. And he was just trying to get us to actually crack the book, you know, but
yeah.
But it helps. It helped, man. It helped. It's good. Yeah.
I approve of this message.
I approve of this message. That's what I told you about that paperclip meme you made. Oh, Davi, you're brilliant. I'm going to let you take all the credit for that one and not say I had anything to do with that or the other memes. Yeah, because I don't want to be, you know, Woodward and Bernstein showing up at the White House the day after the article about Deep Throat comes out, or about the president come out and then, like, peeing on the White House lawn and taking pictures of it and faxing it to other journalists. It'd be the equivalent of that. So I'll let you take all the credit for it, even though I helped.
Okay. Fine by me.
Yep.
I like credit.
I like credit, too. So we're talking about unreliable narrators, like the guy in Fight Club. He's an unreliable narrator. You know, actually... The guy that wrote that book, Chuck Palahniuk, however you say it, he has a book. Somebody told me he has a book about therapy cults, and I'm not talking about like the meetings in Fight Club. He actually has a book that's about cults that do psychoanalyzing that pretend not to be cults. Do you know what that book is? Do you know his stuff well?
I have never heard of this book. No.
Hmm.
It's interesting, though.
You know what's interesting to me too? A lot of people. taught when they talk about Fight Club, they're like, yeah. And he was like totally addicted to going to AA meetings and he wasn't even a drinker. And I'm like, that's not really true. He wasn't a drinker, but he went to like one AA meeting and he didn't stay. He ended up going to meetings with people with bigger problems. It was like AA had too much redemption and possibility of recovery for him. He was going to
meeting. I don't even remember an AA meeting. I thought it was like a testicular cancer.
No,
thing.
He went to an AA meeting at the beginning. Well, I know that he actually stole the schedule of all the meetings at that church basement off the bulletin board and put it in his pocket, you know, like,
yeah,
like, which is kind of selfish and creepy anyway. Like, I'm going to take this, but it was a lot of AA meetings on it. No, he went to an AA meeting. I know he did. There's one where it's one of the first meetings he goes to, and it's like people they're reading the AA literature at the beginning of it. But he doesn't stay in that because it's too happy. He wants to go to ones where people are dying.
Well, because he needs to cry. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've actually I've been sober for 20 years. I went to AA meetings from 94 until 2006. I haven't been to one since. I'm still sober. I've learned a lot from it, incorporated it into my life. Actually, the thing, they're kind of culty, man. But it's like it's it's more the people than the program itself that's culty. I think the people make it culty, and I think what makes it culty the most is the cross-pollination of stuff that's not pure AA that's come in from like 70s psycho babble, pop psychology and therapy cult stuff, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
but no, but I used to go to some Al-Anon meetings when I was in a band with someone when I was sober. And I was in a band with someone who was newly sober, and he started drinking. I actually went to some Al-Anon, and I went to this Al-Anon meeting that was above an AA meeting at the same time. It was like, you know, park your wife who doesn't drink up here to deal with her problems with you while you go down.
What's Al-Anon?
Al-Anon is for, it was the first 12, you know, there's like 50 12-step programs now. It was the first 12-step program after AA. It was basically AA started in 1935. And all the wives, it was men only, it was white businessmen only when it started. And the wives of the businessmen running it, they were like, well,
like by design or just coincidentally?
That's how it was. But at first, you know, the first meeting was like 12 people. The first group was in someone's home. But
okay.
Well, actually, that's discussed in the book 12 Traditions and 12 Steps. It was written in the 50s about how they came up with the tradition of the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. Which basically means anybody's welcome as long as they're trying to recover. Like, even if you're drunk, if you're not obnoxious, you can go to an AA meeting. Because what they did was when there started to be, you know, 20 or 30 cities around the country that had meetings, they had a central office that started in one room in New York City. And the central office had all the meetings in the country send their list of rules. And they realized that if they were all enforced at every meeting, no one could be a member.
Well, like they contradicted?
They were so inclusive or so exclusive that if all of them were enforced, it would omit 100% of the possible people that could go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they made,
well, that's a problem.
They made a tradition, you know, did group consciences and had votes and discussions and decided that, that every meeting everywhere, if you want to call yourself AA, it should be anybody is welcome. Yeah. So, and I like the way the decision-making process works in AA, and the founder of it in the book, 12, the 12 and 12 that I described, the 12 book, 12 steps and 12 traditions, Bill Wilson wrote in the 50s that the organizational structure of Alcoholics Anonymous is something, he said something like it's an intriguing mixture or working mixture of democracy and anarchy. And first of all, like calling your own thing anarchy in the 50s when they were like jailing, you know, dissidents and like blacklisting communists, calling something anarchy was dangerous. And he used that word, but he used it correctly because it literally is voluntary association where people vote on things, but then it's not like 51% decided. It's kind of voted on, decided, talked about, quorumed, voted on, decided. And then, you know, like usually the person with the most sober time in the room gets more weight or whatever. But it's really like it really is kind of a great example of how anarchy could work. And I talked about that in my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, of using the 12 traditions of AA as a style guide for running ad hoc organizations, you know, things that aren't going to exist forever. You just get together to do something. Like literally, if Occupy Wall Street read that book, they would have taken over the country by now and be running it as a socialist paradise.
Well, they had this weird kind of quasi-democracy anarchy thing going in their consensus process.
I'm doing the hand signals.
The snapping and the jazz hands and the hissing and the I don't like hissing. It's caught on, at least in California, where like a speaker says something you don't like, you hiss, and I just think it's very rude. But
yeah, you know why cats hiss at each other? Because it imitates the sound of a snake, and innately cats fear the sound of snakes because, you know, they'll hurt them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's why humans do it too.
Yeah, it has some kind of like internal response that makes you go danger and shuts you up. it's kind of like the hippie equivalent of a police baton to the back of your head, to the part of your brain that controls your motor functions. Yeah.
But the problem with Occupy was it was a working group with no mission statement.
Yeah.
And so like
I
was deeply involved. I slept on the ground outside the Federal Reserve in San Francisco for a couple weeks.
Were you an ANCAP yet?
Yeah, I was already an ANCAP. Wow.
Were you the only one?
No, I wasn't. I was the only one who committed to actually being at the meetings and working in the working groups and sleeping in the encampment. But wow. There were a lot of Ron Paul libertarians, and there were a lot of InfoWar people, and you know. But the thing is, most of the people were there to like wave signs and distribute communist propaganda. And most of the libertarians and ANCAPs who were there to talk to the active communists and try to like redeem them of their bad ideas.
I know one thing that happened was somebody printed up Larkin Rose's When Should You Shoot a Cop article, the original blog post that, you know, later turned into like a career for He Who Cannot Be Named. But that career may have ended tonight, but we'll see tomorrow. So Larkin, somebody handed that thing out. I don't think they put Larkin's name on it, or maybe they did, but like, somebody from the main, like the right wing news got a hold of one of those flyers and thought Occupy Wall Street were handing out things that said, it's time to shoot cops. And Glenn Beck actually like quoted that and held that flyer up and talked about it. Did you see Larkin posted something the other day that said, it was like, I'm giving up public speaking and traveling to speak and blah, blah, blah. And then like an hour later, just deleted it. Did you see that?
No, but he's done that before.
Okay. Yeah, the Liberty rock stars, mini rock stars, like retire every once. It's kind of like, do you remember, you weren't alive then, but in the 70s, the Rolling Stones had like 10, no, like 4 or 5 last ever tours. Like, we're breaking up. I remember hearing on the radio in Boston when I was visiting my sister, like, and get your tickets now for the last ever Rolling Stones tour. You know, I think it's, I don't even know if it was a marketing thing. Maybe they really meant to break up and then just, you know, went back together. I don't know.
It's like a dysfunctional relationship.
A band is,
you get
generally
together and you break up, and you know, it's
that's why I'm into ad hoc things now, of like voluntary stuff with no contract, no commitment. It works as long as it works, and then you shake your hands and go the opposite way. Because of being in rock bands, it's such a horrific thing to like put all of your energy into something for 7 years, to like the point of like you're signed to a major label, you're touring Europe, you're all around the country, and you hate each other, man. It's like being married to like four abusive spouses all married to each other.
It's a dysfunctional polyamorous.
I'm not gonna blame it all on them. It's like a four-way abusive polyamorous marriage. Yeah. All right, we'll be back. What is the Freedom Fiends then? 12-headed Hydra? I don't know.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Daddy.
Meow. Meow.
Yep. And this is how radio works. I'm like looking for the topic that I want to talk about. Well, here's a couple more things that that you say that worms sounds for. Why are rights mean beep? Can't say it on the air. or, well, our rights mean beep, or without rights, mankind suffocates. I like those.
Works for me.
Yeah, works for me too. So we were talking about unreliable narrators before in the movie Fight Club. Unreliable narrator is a literary technique where basically the person telling the story to you is crazy.
Right, so you can't really trust what you're reading.
Yep. But there are two reliable narrators near the end of that film. What are they?
Well, there's the surveillance camera. When you see the fight between
when he's beating himself up,
Jack and Tyler Durden, Jack being a sort of pseudonym, we don't really know that character's
name.
Well,
the reason the main character played in the movie by, what's the guy's name?
Edward Norton.
Yeah. He doesn't have a name. You never hear him called a name. You hear him called Sir a lot, but everyone's called Sir because it's a cult and they all, you know, no one gets to have a name until they're dead, which actually I think is something that came from some military rebel group in the last century where, you know, you didn't get to have a name until you die and then you get to be a hero. Was that the Contras or it might have been the Spanish Civil War anarchists? Somebody.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah. Also,
yeah, it would seem like radical collectivists would take away your name.
Yeah. And also, well, a lot of cults do too, where they rename you. Also, the thing of waiting outside the house for 3 days to be allowed to come in and train to prove you're worthy was something they used to do at Zen monasteries.
Yeah, to prove that you're rejected 3 times.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you're accepted.
Yeah. I like the one where he's beating him with a broom and says, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to go get a shovel. Oh, and before that, he's like, I'm sorry to let you down, but you're just too young. You're going to have to leave. Now, get off my property or I'm calling the cops. Like that guy would call the cops. It wouldn't be.
Hey, you know, Mr. Miyagi does that. The whole, like, telling the kid to, like, wash all his cars and sand all his wood and nail all his nails. That's sort of like waiting outside for 3 days to prove you're serious.
There's actually a guy in AA in LA who died a few years back who was, like, totally famous. And I guess you're supposed to be anonymous with AA, except in matters of press, radio, and films. That's in the book. Doesn't say internet, but probably would have if they'd had it. And we're on radio. But Clancy was very open about his AA membership. He broke his own anonymity. I'm only given his first name. And he's dead. So I can.
His first name is Clancy, not his last name?
No, it's his first name. He's an old, curmudgeonly dude. He always wore a suit. He sponsored like 100 guys. He died of old age, you know, sober for like 60 years or something. And he used to have guys come over to his house and like all his sponsees. He had like dozens of sponsees and they'd all come over to his house and wash his car and clean his house and stuff. And the weird thing was like he kind of ran it like a drill sergeant, which is not my idea of good AA, but he had a higher percentage of guys that stayed sober than a lot of people sponsoring people. But he also made them like, you know, some sponsors are really kind of like, hey man, these are only suggestions, do what you want. You know, if you relapse, it's your problem. You can come back if you don't die. But Clancy was like, okay, you're sober. All right, go to Salvation Army and buy a suit. And he'd make his sponsees wear a suit to AA meetings. And these meetings in LA in California are like just full of people in t-shirts and shorts, you know, like,
and to like prove they're serious or why?
He said, if you're going to be sober, you better look sober. And it's funny because, okay, here's an example.
Men in suits don't drink.
Here's an example of like things spilling over from pop psychology sort of, or from like outside influences of AA. Literally, okay, there's this thing in the AA reading where they say, you know, something like, it's something at the end of one of the reading, you know, that they read at the beginning of each meeting. It's from the book. I forget what it is, but it's something about helping others or something. And what I heard was Clancy starting about, you know, in the late 60s or 70s, when that part came up, he would interrupt the whole meeting and say, and that's the most important part of the meeting, and don't you forget it. People got sick of it, but you couldn't really throw him out, and he was kind of a celebrity in an anonymous program. So it was like what they do to shut him up was they would all like bark that line right before he said it, that they were reading out loud all together, like parrot it and look at him. That was the group conscience to shut him up. So newcomers coming into the room who didn't know Clancy or didn't know the story thought you were supposed to parrot things like that, brought it to other meetings, and then it brought it to other fellowships. And now like AA doesn't do that a lot, but NA, there's like 5 or 6 things like One is alcohol is a drug, period, in the readings of NA. Like, that's everyone wild. In the room will parrot that. And it sounds really culty when you come in. And it kind of is, because no one knows that in NA, when they're doing that, they're making fun of a dead guy from AA, you know?
It's like llama dung in the Air Force.
In a different city. Llama dung?
We'll have to talk about that okay. when we get back.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. Laughing and multitasking as Western civilization collapses. What are you? You're multitasking there, aren't you? You're getting.
I am always multitasking. I actually am incapable of single tasking. I learned this in school when other kids were getting on Ritalin. I learned that the way that I needed to concentrate was to be reading a book while I was sitting in class. And then I carried that over into college, where I was listening to an audiobook while reading my college books. I can't pay attention to one thing at a time.
Yeah, I think doctors over-prescribing all those psych meds is laziness combined with serving commerce, you know, greedy commerce instead of helping people. And I think they have their place, maybe, but I think their place is probably in about 1/100th of the people they prescribe them to. I also think that taking speed to, like, make your brain work functional in society is kind of doesn't make sense to me, because every person I've ever met who took speed over a period of time, their life got worse, not better. And I don't see why it'd be different from a doctor, because the stuff they were getting in San Francisco was pure right off the the biker assembly line, the biker scientists who were actually doing it right. San Francisco sure, has some of the most powerful and pure methamphetamine in the world.
Here's the crazy thing about giving speed to your kids. Like, you give it to them when they're like 11, 12, or 13, when they're first starting to sort of be teenagers and act up, and then they're on their parents' insurance and they get their prescription drugs until they're 18, and then you're just like, no, we're going to take away your speed now. You figure it out.
Obama's extended that to 26, though. You can stay in your, you can get your parents' medicine free speed until 26.
Okay, well, great. Then you cut them off at 26.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting, because it goes back to that thing about that Colleen said that I didn't know, and I looked it up, and it's actually true. Is like, I always knew that, like, you know, vulnerable people were susceptible to cults, but I also didn't realize that people at very transitional points in their life are very susceptible to cults. And
also people more intelligent than average. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Well, that's why everyone in that cult, you know, including the leader of it, dismisses people and says, like, if you look up, you know, analyses that I might be wrong, you're lazy and stupid. And I actually talked to someone the other day who said one of those people wanted to argue with them about the deer leader, the Molly guy. And, you know, so the guy, my friend, started having a conversation with this guy on the face beefs about it. And, you know, the guy's like, yes, I will debate you. And he started debating him and was using logic, wasn't being heated, wasn't going ad hominem. And the guy just blocked him. Like, you know, so basically that cult is raising a generation of, you know, ANCAP children who think they are critical thinkers, but are completely the opposite. It's kind of like Ritalin without the drugs, man, I think.
Yeah. for sure. I mean, it totally makes sense to me. Like, if you are an above intelligence person, and I don't want to stroke my own brain here, but I think that's me, and you're surrounded by, you know, stupid people most of your life, and then you come across a group that seems intelligent, that is filled with other people of above average intelligence, and they're telling you, no, you're not weird, no, you're not crazy, you're right, you've been right all along, you're surrounded by stupid people, that would be very, like, emotionally satisfying.
Yep, yep. Humans. So, llama dung. Llama dung. Tell me something about llama dung.
You gotta pay off this story.
Yeah, so I was talking about this thing in AA where, oh, that's another thing too. Like, people, okay, not only did people like respond to that article from around the world that have never listened to Fiends before and say, like, great interview, but, you know, complained about like the ads cutting off the interviewees a couple times. It was like, no, it's because they hadn't been on radio. It's hard to do when you're excited until you've done it a bunch of times. Even we miss it once in a while, and we do this every day. The other thing was like, great interview, but why in the world did you keep recapping the story after every break? It's because it's radio, man, because most people listen to radio for like a half hour tops in their car while driving to or from the store or to or from work. And you have to, I mean, I can't count the number of people that do that wrong too. Like, you know, I mean, not on the big mainstream radio shows, because they do it right, because they're beholden to advertisers and they're good at radio, even if they're talking about ridiculous, you know, pro-war stuff. Some of the smaller syndicated shows, like, they'll start a show, they'll say, today we're interviewing Davi Barker, and they will talk to you for 2 hours and never again say who they're talking to until the end. They'll say, well, usually they won't even say, what's your website? The guy will say, oh, by the way, my website is shinybadgers.com. You know, like, they, if you're listening anywhere on the radio to that, you're like, well, I heard this interesting conversation between nobody and nobody. I can't get any more information. And then those people, I've actually had people like, write me and ask me about something they heard on a radio station on a town we're on, thinking that we were the show that was on. Like, who's the guy you interviewed yesterday? I really wanted, he didn't say his name. And I'm like, we didn't interview anybody. We haven't interviewed anybody for months, you know, when this happened. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And the guy got indignant. Like, I'm supposed to know, and I'm not politely offering him a customer service for a station in, you know, Kentucky somewhere that we're on that I didn't listen, you know. I don't know who's on after us.
So let me pay off
the station
story.
In Kentucky that we're on right now is a good station. I just want to say that.
Yeah.
Paducah, yo.
So this is World War II. The Air Force was maintaining a herd of llamas in New Jersey so that they had a reliable source of llama dung. And the reason for that was that they treated the leather in their airplane seats with llama dung. And so finally someone got the bright idea. It was war llamas. And someone got the bright idea to ask, you know, why do we do this?
and he was court-martialed for asking.
Right. So they go back and they look and they say, well, you know, they treated the leather seats on the Jeeps in World War I in the Army with that. It's sort of been policy for leather seats for a long time. And they go, well, that doesn't explain it. And they go back even further and they discover. Anyway, they track it all the way back to a telegram instructing the British cavalry in the colonial period to treat their saddles with llama dung. And the reason was because there was a shortage of cowhide, and so they were making saddles out of horsehide, and the smell of horsehide spooked the horses, and so they treated it with llama dung to cover the smell of the horse so that it wouldn't spook the cavalry horse.
Man.
And so this tradition of treating leather saddles and then leather seats and then leather airplane cockpits with llama dung was just totally unquote, just following orders, just doing what I'm told.
Just doing what we've always done. And we've always won. So we're going to keep doing. If we don't put llama dung on the airplane seats, we'll lose the battle. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. I mean, and we were riffing off this thing earlier about this thing in AA where people are in NA, where people parrot, you know, like, alcohol is a drug, period. Like, everyone says period all together. And it's really, it traces back to in AA, in a different city, people making fun of this old-timer Clancy because he would, like, say, and that's the most important part of the world, the program, and don't you forget it. And they were just trying to shut him up, you know. So
I know another one of these stories that I heard first person from a guy who was in the military in one of the Iraq wars. And he said that when he was working on a base, I forget where it was in the country, but it was a U.S. base, and it was sort of, he was instructed with going out on the tarmac and repainting the white lines.
Yeah.
And he accidentally kicked over his bucket. And so rather than cleaning it up, he just painted it into a square and went back to boot camp. And then he goes, or went back to the barracks. And so then he's deployed. He spends some time overseas. He comes back and he's in the same base. And he sees that people have been repainting that white square on the tarmac.
Yeah. And we'll tell some more of these. But in case we sidetrack ourselves so far, I'm going to tell the punchline of this now so we don't forget. That is what the state is. The government, the thought that we need government, the thought of, well, it's not a perfect system, but it's the best one we have, which, you know, I always think of that meme that's that under a picture of, you know, an Inca throwing a virgin into a volcano. But, you know, it's talk a little bit about that, Davi, about how people just parrot stuff about government and why you need it. And even though it's not perfect, we have to do it. And it really is just the camel's dung on the seat or you know, yelling period at the end of a sentence in an NA meeting because someone else in a different fellowship, in a different meeting, in a different city wouldn't shut up during the meeting opening, 20 years earlier.
You know, it reminds me of that saying, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Which you hear all the time in NA and AA, even though it's not in either of the books. It's carryover from psychobabble. You know, in this case, it's true, but that's a thing from psychobabble, 70s pop psychology, cult yeah. therapy cults. Another one that I've actually heard Molyneux say that somebody thought he made up was taking ownership for your actions. Someone was like, yeah, Molyneux says that.
He invented that philosophical concept.
Yeah.
That or you own your actions.
People think that. Okay. I'll admit something. That someone actually got kind of mad at me about this. So when I was the other day, I was supposed to do an interview with you and Stefan Kinsella. No, it was actually supposed to be with Stefan and I and Derek J. And my internets were dying. They've since been fixed. The guy came out, updated my NSA backdoor modem, gave me a new modem. It's all good now. My speeds are fine. But I wasn't on that show. So you did it with those two. And when I was editing it, you know, I go through really quick. I take out long spaces. I take out burps. I take out, I never take out like any meaning of anything. But I actually took out something that Kinsella said. He said, you guys were talking about taking ownership for your actions. And Kinsella said, yeah, Molyneux says that. I wasn't there to say to him, he didn't invent that. You know, that's like an old AA thing that I heard 20 years ago and it was old then. You know, it's like it's an old pop psychology thing from the 70s. So I actually took that out and Kinsella got a little irked with me, or not like furious, but just like, really? Why? And I was like, because it was almost like a burp on radio, man, because you said something that just made it sound like you didn't know what you're talking about. So I took it out. And I don't actually know. Maybe he knew Molyneux didn't say that and he was going to say, yeah, Molyneux says that among other people, but he didn't. So it just sounded like a fart, you know. And in full transparency, I will admit I did that, and I stand by it because I didn't want my friend Kinsella to sound dumb, you know. And he's not dumb; he's smart as hell, man. So yeah,
for sure,
I did that.
Yeah, I lost my train of thought. Where were we before we went on the Molyneux?
We were at the state is the equivalent
of
dung on a seat.
This is, if you imagine insanity as a spectrum, right? There's like normal in the middle, like a bell curve. And on one end, there's doing everything over and over again, expecting different results. And on the other end, there's doing everything over and over again and expecting the same results, even though the environment has changed. It's like hitting every nail with a hammer and expecting the same results, right?
Yeah. Drug addiction and alcoholism are perfect examples for that too, because like every addict finally realizes they have a problem, but they try like, oh, I'll only use alone, or I'll only use at friends, or I'll only use on weekends, or I'll go out to a different town and I won't be able to find it. None of that stuff works because you're not changing yourself inside, you know. We'll be back to redemption in the third act.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Worms.
Worms.
Meow, meow, meow.
So, Dobby, when you do the offset worming to try to be on radio, see, I try to do it on to the pod feed because I'm recording it correctly on my end, and that's the one that's going to stick around for 100 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. But are you sure you're not doing it in the wrong direction and making it worse?
No, I don't. I'm just, okay. It's all trial and error, man. But that's the great thing about beats is they're rhythmic. So if you go far enough in the wrong direction, yeah. You've got it right.
Yeah, you'll go all the way around the world to Mecca. Yeah.
It's a broken clock that's right 60 times a minute.
60 times a minute. Well, if you want to check it, you know, you could go to the GCN site, gcnlive.com, and get the thing, the archive, the MP3s they put up there are what goes out on radio. It's a record of what went out on radio.
That's cool.
I'll send you the link. So, Uncle Davy, tell me about the monkeys.
Yeah, so this is one more of these weird... Doing the way we've always
over
done
and over and over and expecting different results. Yeah.
But this is animal psychology. So here's the experiment. You put a bunch of monkeys in a room and you
Freedom Fiends Hangout. Yeah. Freedom Fiends Picnic. Yeah.
You put a bunch of monkeys in a hot tub with microphones.
Yeah.
No. So it's monkeys in a cage and you give them a ladder and you hang a banana from a string in the ceiling. And the monkeys eventually figure out, oh, you put the ladder there and you climb up and you get the banana. But what you do is you electrify the room so that if anybody touches the banana, all
scientists
of the monkeys
are
get shocked.
Scientists are jerks, man.
Yeah, well.
They really are. Now, did anyone ever actually do this, or is this an apocryphal science story?
I have no idea, to tell you the truth.
Like the thousand monkeys typing Shakespeare. That never happened. Although, actually, that's been around and said so long that some grad student somewhere tried it with 10 monkeys, and they didn't write even a complete word other than, like, maybe no at some point, you know, like two letters together.
No, but I'll bet they wrote UPB before Molyneux did.
Always with the Molyneux. All right.
Okay. So the idea is, so they learn that if anybody touches the banana, all of them get electrocuted. It's a collective punishment thing.
That was pretty funny, though. Go on.
So then you take one monkey out and you put in a new monkey and the monkey's like, oh, room full of monkeys not eating a banana. Well, I'm just going to go eat that banana. And all of the monkeys who've experienced the electrocution will beat him up and pull him down before he gets up the ladder.
And they'll say, support our troops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's for the greater good.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know why. He hasn't been electrocuted. And he doesn't know why they're doing this, but he learns that they do it. And then you take out an old monkey and you put in a new monkey. And you take out an old monkey and you put in a new monkey. And you keep doing this until all of the monkeys in the cage have learned the behavior of not letting anyone eat the banana, but none of them have ever been electrocuted.
I know a way that this actually does work, because my dad used to do this, not with monkeys, but with sheep when he was a farmer. They would rent really cheap, like an electric fence unit that would fence in an area. And they'd leave it for a few weeks and the sheep would get electrocuted and then they would, stop going near the fence. And then they would put up, you know, just a twine fence or a non-electrocuted fence instead. And the sheep would teach their young that were born later not to do it. And for several generations, that would work.
Right. And so the idea is that this is how customs are taught.
And then there'd be some black sheep would be like, I don't care. I'm touch the fence.
I'm going to try it. And I'm going to do it.
Eat it. Yeah.
Soylent Green is people. That's a different metaphor. So the funny thing about this is that I did this as a skit. I pledged a fraternity when I was in college, and during Hell Week, all the alumni arrived for the last day, and all the pledges who have been sort of sufficiently broken over the course of the week are instructed to entertain the alumni with a skit.
Ew.
And so I whipped
dance, up slaves dance.
Exactly.
It's teaching you to be a captain of industry, but you're really, you know, even captains of industry aren't really leaders. They're slaves to somebody.
Yeah.
So go on. Yeah.
So I wrote out this experiment as a script using the pledges as monkeys and myself as a scientist and went through the experiment. But at the end, when the last monkey was sort of huddled in the corner crying and saying, "Why are you doing this to me? I don't understand." The scientist walks up to him and he pats him on the back and he says, "Don't worry, we've all been through this." And the reason that's important is because that's what the older brothers said to the younger brothers every time they complained about Hell Week, was everyone said, this was the line, "Don't worry, we've all been through this." And I was just pointing out, man, this is a learned behavior. You've all been abused and you should just acknowledge it rather than justifying it.
By your government. Yep, it's true, man. Worms. Great show, Bobby. Was that 2 hours? Felt like about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's these caffeine mind control wafers you gave me. Ones with the Bitcoin embedded in them. Blah, 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 blah.
Worms.
Worms.
Meow. Meow, meow, meow.
Davi, you're so important that we're going to go over. You had a question. What was it?
Well, so this takes a little bit of a story. So something that I do for fun.
We're off the air completely.
Are we recording? No.
We're recording. Yeah, we're recording.
Oh, all right. It's a podcast.
I record everything. I'm that important.
Thursday nights, I get together with old high school friends and I play role-playing games, like tabletop role-playing games.
That's amazing right there, because there is not a single person I went to high school with that I would ever want to see again. There's actually a comedian talking about that. I think it's Maria Bamford. She's like, "Yeah, I suddenly started getting all these spam for classmates.com. And I'm like, seriously? There's a reason I don't talk to most of those people.
No, these are pretty cool guys.
All right.
And gals.
All right.
We rotate as far as like who's running the story, and then we each get like a 6 to 8 week period to run our own story. And I'm not a fan of the fantasy genre, so I'm setting mine in modern day Arizona. And I'm trying to run a fantasy element, and I'm trying to make the primary sort of modus operandi of the fantasy element the radio tower in the middle of town. And so I'm trying to suggest somehow that like the space-time continuum is ripping apart because of something some mad scientist did with this radio tower that's causing all of these bizarre anomalies. Like, that's my fantasy element. And so I'm wondering if, like, can you just...
You need some radio technology science to make it more believable.
Just enough to suspend disbelief. It doesn't have to be possible. Okay. It's just like, if there's a crystal in the top of the tower, I can make that a plot element. If there's copper wiring that's significant, I can make that an element. Like, what is radio capable of is what I'm saying.
Could you make it? Well, one thing about AM radio towers is that, is it AM or FM? One of them has to have ground planes under the antenna radiating out. Let me see.
Ground planes.
Ground planes antenna.
And those go into the ground?
Yeah. Is that like they're buried under the ground when they build the studio. Is that AM or FM? And I know that you have to like, if it's in ground that's not very conductive, you have to, here's something that might work in it. You might not even need to say it's AM or FM, but you should look it up. You could just say it's a radio station because, okay, picture the tower going up, you know, the whole thing is, the whole antenna is part of the radiating unit. And here's one interesting thing is when the welds in the different pipe sections in an AM tower have to be maintained and like re-welded. If the welds break and it's still like mechanically holding it up, but there's like resonance or like not full contact in there, the station loses power. Like a 1,000-watt station won't, you know, it'll only like effectively radiate like 400 watts or something, or it'll radiate like 1,000 watts, but it'll be a dirty signal. Because that antenna actually acts like an antenna itself, picking up other things and rebroadcasts them.
That's interesting.
If the equipment, in the broadcast studio or in the transmitter building isn't like correctly maintained or there's a problem with it, it can pick up another station and rebroadcast it quietly. So like you'll hear two stations, but one's quieter than the other. You know, you're listening to station A, but you'll hear a little bit of station B, another station in the same area underneath
it. Yeah. Okay.
But maybe there could be something with the antennas, like the welds are broken or something, and you know some other foreign metal gets in there and it acts like a battery and does something supernatural. That could be something. You know, this is how the word cyberspace was invented. William Gibson knew nothing about computers back in the day and like asked some friends who knew about computers, and they explained computers to him and how they might be able to connect one day. And he called it cyberspace and came up with that term like two decades before the World Wide Web or something. Maybe you'll do something like that with this. So
maybe
the ground planes, I don't even know if they're called ground planes, but you have to have like under a transmission tower. It's either with AM or FM. I'm trying to look it up.
So this is amateur and pirate radio.
No,
for what that's worth. Do you know if that would be more likely to be AM or FM?
It's more likely FM in America because the transmitter is more readily available. Oh, you know what? Because actually I think it's AM that needs the ground plane.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll look into that. The ground planes is a good idea because there's also a copper mine going on.
Okay. It could act as a ground plane. But here's the thing, like with the kind of antenna that needs that, the big towers that need that, when they build the tower, they have to dig up the ground and put like copper piping connected to the antenna or to something in the transmitter radiating out like 10 or 20 feet, like, you know, 30 of them in a circle, like flower or spokes on a bicycle coming out from the antenna under the ground, like a few feet under the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, if the ground is really dry and not very electrically conductive, it doesn't work right. So what they actually have to do is make a solution of copper sulfate and pour it on the ground every couple of years or every year.
To saturate the ground with copper. That's cool.
Now, I didn't know any – I knew that, but I didn't think about it. I got copper sulfate because Ben Stone told me that it's good for killing roots in your sewage system. And and I got it because we have that problem. And like the roots grow into our sewer system because it's old and it's not PVC. And you know, every like once a year we have to have Roto-Rooter come out. And Ben was like, oh, I never need to have Roto-Rooter come out. I have that same problem. I just pour, you know, a cup of – copper sulfate crystals down the toilet once a month, and it's blue. It looks like the speed in Breaking Bad, but brighter. And you can buy it for like, you know, $5 a pound on Amazon or something, or $2 a pound.
That's crazy. I've been reading about this stuff called azurite, and it's in Arizona. The copper mining that goes on, like obviously copper is an element. You take it out of, but when it's unprocessed. Normally, copper deposits are green because they have that patina. But in Arizona, there's another kind of copper deposit called azurite that's bright blue.
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of using – that's one of my little –
Google this substance, copper sulfate.
I'm going to definitely
– but here's the interesting thing, and this might work too in your story somehow, is I started pouring – you're supposed to pour it down like once a month tops. And I poured like – I was like, man, we have a really bad root problem. I've never done it. I'll do it like, you know, four times in 1 week. The first week and then do it every once a month or something. And I did that for a week, like every other day I poured a cup down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Like 5 days after that, the tree that my sewage line goes under, the one that's roots are growing into, that got struck by lightning on my 50th birthday. I really believe that what happened was the copper sulfate got into the roots, went into the tree, and raised the electrical conductivity of that tree to a very high degree and made it a 70-foot tall lightning rod. You remember when my tree got struck by? I was here. It was
so scary. Copper is a major part of the plot too.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to. I'm sort of using the. Have you ever? Do you know anything about? It's called the Tesla Spirit Radio.
No.
Okay.
Was it Tesla's way of sending electrical power across a distance through the air? I know he was working on that.
No, it's a couple of copper coils hooked into a base that looks like some sort of like computer, like those green boards, like motherboards. And supposedly the interaction between these two copper coils, which are close but not touching, pick up certain frequencies, and they can be adjusted to pick up certain frequencies. And people claim that you can hear distant lightning storms and weather, and it converts sort of ambient electromagnetic fields into sound.
Well, that doesn't sound like science fiction to me. I mean, you know, there's actually a service of the United States government. I don't know how they do this. They probably do it with something like that. It's one of the actual services the government provides, and they charge money for it. But you can pay some amount of money and get a map of lightning strikes in a given geographic area in a set of dates. I actually wanted to do that to like prove, yes, lightning struck the tree, and it's not just these pictures I have, but I thought if it was free, I definitely would have looked it up, but it costs money.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
So it's not a coil in a radio antenna. It's just the metal itself and the structure that it is that transmits.
Say it again.
What's transmitting in a radio tower? I don't understand what is actually creating the signal, because I know it's a frequency.
The signal isn't created in the tower. It's emitted from the tower. It's created in a device called a transmitter, which is an electronic rack mount piece of equipment. They used to be tube. Now they're often transistor and integrated circuits. But actually on really big, like, you know, 50,000 watt or 10,000 watt and up, they also have a tube in them still, because it's easier to do it that way. But, you know, if you look at like, okay, let me send you a picture of a radio antenna. Let's see, Davi. You know, it's actually like, it's good that there's a lot of pictures of radio antennas to show you on this, because I would say like, we'll just go look at one. But actually, like, it's usually trespassing to get anywhere near a radio antenna, because first of all, people strip the big copper cables off of them and sell them for crack money or speed money. It's really common. The other thing is it's basically like, to even come near a radio antenna, like, you could be arrested for terrorism, because radio is still considered such an important, like, government controlled, like, we need to be able to get the message out to the people, you know, like, okay, guns are all illegal now, or there's a tornado coming, to where like it's considered a government property, even when it's privately owned. So there's usually fences around getting anywhere near them. But I just sent you a picture of one.
The monopole antenna.
So if you look at the base of it, there's a little building there. I think it's actually like a camper, like a mobile unit. But then there's a building to the right of it. The transmitter is in that building. You know, if you go in there, it's like racks of equipment in that building. And that's where the radio, where the sound, you know, electrical impulse from the studio is turned into a radio signal. And then it's pumped out through big copper cables into that tower. And
so the tower is really just a copper structure.
Steel, usually, I think, but okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, so steel framework with copper wiring, and the copper is what's
copper carry.
It's vibrating correctly.
It's like braided copper wire. You know, that's like an inch and a half in diameter. That's going from that little building up to the top of the tower, and No, the copper is just bringing it, you know, kind of like in the same way that your cable that comes into your house that goes to your TV is bringing a signal.
Yeah.
It's just bringing it. And actually the studio is usually nowhere near the transmitter, because the transmitters usually have to be up on hills, and also people don't like them near their houses because people believe that they cause cancer clusters, and they may.
Yeah,
that's not funny, you know, but it's like, you know, around a big radio tower, you know, there'll be like a 10 or 20% higher incidence of certain kinds of cancers in children that grow up there. So they're usually in the middle of nowhere. And the studio is usually downtown in an office building. And the studio uses a signal to tower link, an STL, which used to usually be a little transmitter, like a 5-watt transmitter or something, microwave transmitter, that would actually like have a little dish like you'd have, you know, for your TV or whatever, dish TV. You'd have one of those pointed in a straight line of sight, like literally like looking to the antenna, to the receiver that's, you know, somewhere usually on the antenna, but then feeds down into that building and then is amplified in the transmitter and goes up. Although they're using internet for it a lot more. Like, people actually use a Comrex for that now. And I'm hoping that Fiendphone will be able to be used for that. That's one of the plans.
How far out of town would you put this tower?
Well, you can search, if you go to radio-locator.com, You can search the call letters of any AM or FM commercial station in America. It'll give you the – that's where I get those little maps when we get a new – have you seen the maps for the Fiend stations?
No.
That shows like – okay, go to the freedomfiends.com site.
Already there.
Okay, go to where it says radio stations.
At the top? Radio stations. Yep.
Okay, scroll down. First of all, look at that picture. Click on the picture and look at it.
That's this is you pointing at a
– an antenna. Is that you? That is me pointing at the antenna – that's me. I'm actually listening to myself on the radio in that car in front of me while pointing at the antenna that's broadcasting it. That's KVOC in my town. That's the transmission tower for the,
okay.
And it's delayed. So I could actually like finish the show and drive up there and look at it. So, and that's the little building at the bottom there. And So go back to the radio station's page. Like, okay, scroll down. Let's see. First one, Kinks, KINX, 102.7 FM, Great Falls, Montana, 93,300 watts, Sunday, 6 to 8 p.m. Click on coverage map there.
Got it.
Okay, that is radiolocator.com. This site is actually a pay site. You can do 25 searches a day, but if you do more than that, it locks you out unless you use a different
Okay, app. So Great Falls is the city in the middle here, yep. And the X is the tower.
Yeah, the X is the tower.
And this is 30 miles, so we're looking at about 10 miles.
And the red ring in the middle is like absolutely strong signal. You can get it on any radio. The purple ring outside of that is you can probably get it somewhat legibly on a pretty good radio. And the blue one is you can get it on a really good radio under good conditions.
Okay.
So my
question is not how far you can hear the tower. It's how far the tower should be from the city to prevent cancer.
You'd have to search cancer clusters and do some work on that. I just know that I've actually – okay, so if you go back to the radio locator site, you can actually find from this site on – okay, where it says predicted coverage area for Kinks 102.7 FM. Click on that link and go to the page for 102.7 FM. It's actually got the transmitter location for every antenna here. Like if you, at the bottom, do you see it? 47, 36,
Kinks 24. FM technical info. Station status, view coverage, no. Transmitter location, there's a link.
Yep. So if you click on that.
And there it is.
You can go to Google and actually look at where the link is. So.
How remote is it?
Get the Earth view. Click on the bottom left here to get the Earth view, the satellite view. Mm-hmm. And. It's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you look at it, it's in a barley field.
Right. So this might not matter because part of the deal with the setting of this story is it's a place called Blanaby, and it's sort of smack dab in the middle of between Flagstaff and Phoenix. And the reason that it's there is because Maricopa County and Yavapai County dispute who owns this territory.
And that's real? That's true?
No, this is fictional.
Okay.
They both claim the other county owns the territory, and so neither county is regulating it. And as a result, people move there to avoid regulation.
Yeah.
It's like a disputed zone. So people move there to do amateur radio because they can avoid enforcement of these sorts of regulations.
Yeah, that wouldn't work.
I know, but the players don't know that.
Okay.
Because FCC is federal.
You ever seen The Simpsons where they go to Australia?
Yeah.
And they go there because Bart made a 6-hour collect prank call to Australia. Well, no, he's trying to find out.
To ask you the toilet the Coriolis was the effect. Other
way. Yeah, yeah. And I love that one, man. But there's one in there where Homer gets the bill, the phone bill, and he's like.
Disputed zone.
Yeah. He's like, Burkina Faso, disputed zone. Who calls all these crazy? I just love the idea of disputed zone coming up the location on a phone bill.
This is a game taking
bill.
Place in a disputed zone in the middle of Arizona.
You should spend some time. I have spent some time and enjoyed reading the Wikipedia disputed zone page. I don't know if that's what it's called, but there's a page on there of like, you know, areas and parts of the earth that have dual or more claimed ownership. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
List of territorial disputes. Wikipedia.
I think that's it.
Right. So, I mean, there's, for story purposes, there's some magical reasons why this is. And what it is that the surveying equipment doesn't ever get an accurate reading of this region. And that's why it's never been properly classified. And there's some other reasons why this is like a liminal environment where magic stuff is possible. I'm just, you know, this is all magic anti-physics, right? But I can put the tower outside of town. That's not a problem.
Territory currently disputed between Canada and the United States. It's basically like...
Let's move there.
It's uninhabited.
Free nowhere project.
Yeah, they're all like chunks of rock that are, have birds living on them. I mean, really, the islands. What were the islands that Argentina fought England over? The Falklands. I don't think they had. Did they have people on them?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, Marquillas Seal Island. It looks like Alcatraz. It looks like it's the size of Alcatraz. It has a lighthouse on it. North Rock, New Brunswick and Maine both claim that. North Rock. Seals on North Rock in the Gulf of Maine. Man, this is... This thing is about the size of my house, and it's a disputed zone. That's funny.
You should move there.
Well, there's... it looks like there's already about 60 bull seals living there, and those things are mean and violent, man. They would not like you living there. Although you'd have food for the first year, slaying those things. I like those things. I don't want to slay them. All right, man. Anything else?
I think I'm good. The copper grounding stuff is really useful. The copper sulfate is really useful because there is sort of a... there's magic about copper in this game.
Good.
Especially the azurite copper.
Well, you could also look up and see if copper sulfate forms naturally. It probably does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, brother man. Great night. Great night. Good post-game show. I'm going to leave that on at the end of the episode.
All right, cool.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Later.
Worms.